Camden, New Jersey. Accepting an auto gyro for his South Pole expedition, Rear Admiral Richard E. Byrd says farewell to the USA.
Now I wish you all good luck and bid you goodbye.
Up in Boston, the Barkentine Bear, renamed the Jacob Rupert, is boarded by Admiral Byrd as she takes on her last load of supplies for the hazardous cruise to the ends of the earth. Every man in the crew is equipped for bad weather and a long stay in Little America. With all hands on deck, the staunch Pathfinder shoves off, headed for sea, a daring expedition to solve the mystery of the Antarctic.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
This is the conspiratorial view of history, as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
NASA had a major announcement of its own today. The planet closest to the sun, Mercury, has ice at its poles. The findings came from MESSENGER, the first spacecraft to orbit Mercury. The ice was found in the permanently shadowed region of the North Pole. Scientists said they believe there's ice at the planet's South Pole as well. And in Washington, one of those scientists, David Lawrence, said it's no small amount.
If you add it all up, you have on the order of 100 billion to 1 trillion metric tons of ice. Now, of course, those numbers are big. It's hard to know what to do with them, so we can bring it down to Earth. And in fact, here in this town, if you take the amount of ice that we consider to be at Mercury right now, stack up the entire area of Washington, D.C. by about 2 to 2.5 miles of ice, that's what's present currently at Mercury's poles.
If it's the North Pole, it's Arctic. If it's the South Pole, Antarctic. Both poles have ice and snow. But a few things you should know. Polar bears and igloos, the Arctic. Seals and walruses, the Arctic. Owls and caribou live in the Arctic too. If you think it's cold in the Arctic, you're in for a surprise. It is cold in the Arctic, but the Antarctic's even colder. Seals and penguins, Antarctic. Not much else, Antarctic. Some scientists work there, but no one calls it home. If it's the North Pole, it's Arctic. If it's the South Pole, Antarctic. If it's the North Pole, it's Arctic. If it's the South Pole, Antarctic. Where can you find the wingless fly?
Scott Expedition takes its name from Captain Robert Falcon Scott, one of the most eminent and iconic explorers of the Edwardian Golden Age of exploration. Scott led two expeditions to Antarctica, the second of which was the ill-fated Terra Nova expedition. Scott and his team left England in June 1910 aboard a three-masted wooden sailing ship called the Terra Nova. The expedition had a number of significant scientific and geographical objectives, but these groundbreaking studies would ultimately be eclipsed by the team's attempt to be the first to reach the South Pole. After months of preparation that included laying food and storage depots, Scott led a team of five men to reach the pole on foot. They arrived at 90 degrees south on the 17th of January 1912, only to find they'd been beaten to it by the Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen and his team, who were travelling using dog sleds. Amundsen had arrived at the pole 4 weeks earlier. Scott's party turned for home, struggling through some of the most extreme weather conditions ever recorded in the region. Their progress was painfully slow, and each day took its toll on the team members. Frostbite, illness, and injuries were magnified by strong winds, low temperatures, and by the harsh terrain of Antarctica. By the 20th of March, Scott, Wilson, and Bowers, the only three survivors, were just 11 miles from their largest depot of food and fuel, but a fierce blizzard prevented any advance. Their supplies soon ran out completely, and they perished, exhausted and probably hypothermic, in their tent. Scott's last diary entry was made on the 29th of March, 1912, and ended with the words, "Outside the door of our tent, it remains a scene of whirling drift. I do not think we can hope for any better things now. We shall stick it out to the end. But we are getting weaker, of course, and the end cannot be far. In the century since Scott wrote these words, there have been films, documentaries, and dozens of biographies, yet no one has even attempted to finish his journey. It's that challenge that has been a source of motivation for me for many years, and I'm proud and excited to say that I'm finally in a position to do just that. Along with my teammate Tarka, I'm setting out to retrace Scott's entire 1,800-mile round trip to the South Pole on foot, an expedition that will be the longest unsupported polar journey in history.
On 14th of December 1911, Norwegian explorer Roald Amundsen led a team of four others to become the first to reach the South Pole. They arrived 5 weeks ahead of British explorer Robert Falcon Scott and successfully made it back to their base camp, whereas Scott did not. Amundsen originally had planned to become the first to reach the North Pole, but he changed his target to the south after he learned of the now disputed claim by rival American explorers that they had already reached it. Keeping his new plan secret even from his crew, his ship departed Norway on the 9th of August. Amundsen only told them of their final destination a month later, shortly before they left their port on the island of Madeira. Amundsen's ship arrived in an Antarctic inlet known as the Bay of Whales on the 14th of January 1911, where the crew established a base known as Framheim. They then spent the next 3 months preparing depots across the Ross Ice Shelf prior to the onset of the Antarctic winter. As soon as the sun returned at the end of August, Amundsen attempted to reach the pole, but he was forced to turn back due to the harsh conditions. A second attempt that began in mid-October was much more successful, seeing them arrive at the pole almost 2 months later. As well as being the first expedition leader to reach the South Pole, Amundsen is also the first person to be universally recognised as reaching the North Pole as well, as a result of his later 1926 air expedition, which therefore makes him the first person to actually reach both poles.
Share with you something quite interesting. On the 12th of February, the Pope went to Cuba and met the head of the Orthodox Church. Now, the thing that's interesting is that this is the first meeting in 1,000 years since the Orthodox Church split from Rome, right? So it's a historic thing. Now, what's even more interesting is this. The next day, Kirill, the head of the Orthodox Church, leaves for Antarctica, right? Now, the article says that he went there to see the penguins and to visit the scientists that had set up a little church. Now, if you believe that, I've got some of Saddam's nuclear weapons to sell you. Just look at this. Look at some of these pictures. This is him in Antarctica. Now, what did the Pope tell him? That this, to me, it seems as if the Pope went over to Cuba to meet with this guy, to tell him something that was so important that this historic meeting took place. He told him something. The next day, off he goes to Antarctica to see what it was that the Pope told him and whether it was true. So he went there to see with his own eyes what the Pope told him. Now, that brings up the question, what was it?
What was the reason behind Obama's secret trip to Antarctica? What was the reason for CIA Director James Clapper's simultaneous visit to Australia? Why did Russia's top religious leader go to Antarctica? There has been a virtual media blackout about these highly unusual trips made by officials in Russia and the US. There are a couple of sources that cited Obama traveled to the southern tip of Argentina before crossing the Drake Passage to Antarctica. Indeed, Obama's secret trip comes at a highly unusual time. It follows on the heels of a visit by Patriarch Kirill of Russia. Kirill met with Pope Francis in Havana, Cuba, less than 1 week before he departed for Antarctica. Media sources described the meeting between the two religious leaders as urgent. Nothing like this has happened since the 1054 AD schism that separated Eastern Orthodoxy and Roman Catholicism.
Antarctica is the windiest, coldest, driest, and most uninhabited region on the planet. With 98% of the continent covered in miles-thick ice and limited resources, Antarctica is easily the most naturally inhospitable place on Earth. Still, that barren ice scape covers a tenth of the world's land. And as we know, most countries aren't super willing to let unclaimed land stay unclaimed. Currently, 51 countries have joint international control over Antarctica, with 7 claiming overlapping jurisdictions over certain portions. So who exactly controls Antarctica? Well, back when there was still unexplored land ready for the taking in the world, in order to control a territory, you usually had to be an Aboriginal inhabitant, a powerful occupying force, or at the very least, the first person to show up. In Antarctica's case, there are no indigenous peoples, nor even an occupying force, and even today, there is no permanent human population. So it's hard to argue that any one dominant nation controls the continent. Throughout the 19th and early 20th centuries, a number of expeditions to Antarctica led to many surrounding islands and bays being claimed by different countries. The first was the United Kingdom, which attempted to lay claim to most of the continent. This land grab worried international powers, and around the 1930s, France, Norway, Argentina, Chile, and Nazi Germany began carving out their own territorial claims on Antarctica. Following the end of World War II, Germany lost any claim to the land, and the US asserted its own territorial dominion. By 1959, following a period of scientific frenzy on the continent, 12 countries signed the Antarctic Treaty, establishing the area as a condominium. Not like the type of housing. It means that multiple countries mutually agree to have equal sovereignty over a territory. Although technically all the previous territorial claims are still in effect. Since then, a few dozen more countries have joined onto the Antarctic Treaty. So who owns Antarctica? Well, In short, no one and everyone. The Antarctic Treaty establishes the continent as a scientific preserve only to be used for peaceful scientific purposes. That means no military activity or nuclear testing and free sharing of any scientific discoveries. Plus, there's an environmental moratorium on mining and drilling until at least 2048. As of now, Antarctica may be one of the few places in the world where mutual international cooperation has led to peaceful dispute resolution and uninhibited scientific research. Things are equally complicated on the opposite side of our planet, too, and the debate over the North Pole gets a lot more messy. Have had a heck of a time trying to save 52 scientists and tourists from a trapped ship in Antarctica. My question is, why the heck do we go down there? What do we hope to learn? Howdy, Trace here, breaking the ice for D News. Antarctica is a unique part of our planet. Back in 1959, the Antarctic Treaty was signed to preserve our giant southern continent purely for scientific research. To date, 50 countries have agreed, in the interest of all humankind, that Antarctica shall continue to forever be used exclusively for peaceful purposes. Since the agreement took effect in 1961, experiments dealing in outer space, the origin of our planet, extremophiles, and evolution have all taken place down there, not to mention a few great episodes of Stargate SG-1. People are constantly down there looking at this fascinating part of our planet. Penguin researchers are probably the most visible non-ice-related researchers. Believe it or not, penguin research is kind of a big deal. These flightless birds live in some of the harshest weather on the planet, and yet they're so damn cute! We've learned about their social and mating behaviors, their migration patterns, and living situations, amongst other things. Because they live in such a harsh but fragile environment, though, they've got their cute little feet right on the pulse of the Earth. What about what's under the ice? Lake Vostok is one of science's most intoxicating studies. The Russians drilled down to the continent's largest subglacial lake, a lake that's buried 2.2 miles under the Antarctic ice sheet. No one has ever touched it. It's like a giant time capsule, you guys, giving clues to the history of our planet and maybe even harboring ancient life. Another experiment has almost nothing to do with ice, or even our planet at all, actually. Experimental Physics wins the Crazy Time Award yet again with the IceCube Neutrino Observatory. Neutrinos are electrically neutral cosmic particles flying through the universe constantly, and I do mean through as in through you. Back in the late 1980s, scientists detected some neutrinos from a supernova explosion. They got so thrilled that they decided to build the Ice Cube in Antarctica. Since its founding in 2010, they've cut a cubic kilometer, or about a quarter of a cubic mile, out of the Antarctic ice and set up sensors to detect more of these cool little particles. Neutrinos can pass through solid matter. They might be passing through you right now, like I said, but the 5,000 sensors that they've lowered into this chamber are designed to detect the blue-green flashes of light produced as neutrinos impact the giant ice sheets. I said it almost had nothing to do with ice. It has a little bit to do. The scientists have found a bunch of these so far, and some are definitely extragalactic, as in from other galaxies, like not the Milky Way, somewhere else. See what we've done, politicians of Earth? See what we did? We created a scientific safe haven, and Russians, Americans, French, Chinese, Australians, Belgians, Europeans, everybody, they came together and they're doing some cool, awesome stuff in Antarctica. It's great. I know it's cold, but would you want to visit?
Relax and let the Starfix course through your veins. Well, just weeks after the announcement of his impending divorce, Ashton Kutcher is making tabloid headlines again. Last night, the 2.5 Men star was photographed hanging out in a nightclub with a mysterious black disc rumored to be made of pure evil. For more on this juicy celebrity story, welcome gossip columnist Brian Speed.
Hey, Angelique.
Hey, Brian. So what's the story?
Well, according to TMZ, Ashton showed up at trendy LA club Avalon last night around 1 a.m. with an evil disc under his arm.
What?
Then he spent the rest of the night muttering incantations to it in an incomprehensible tongue.
I can't believe this. Right in front of everybody?
Yeah,
really?
Right in front of everyone. He wasn't even trying to hide it, Angelique.
Oh.
He's obsessed with this disc already. People say Ashton spent the whole night staring at it and his eyes were literally spinning in their sockets.
Okay, so, I mean, what do you know about this disc?
Well, what we know is it's apparently about 2,000 years old and it's been seen with everyone from Roman Emperor Tiberius to Henry VIII.
Well, yeah, it sounds like it gets around.
That's right. Now, TMZ says it's originally from another dimension, but Gawker's reporting that it was found in Antarctica inside an endless cave that may lead to hell itself.
Well, now, there are rumors that People magazine already offered the odious disc $100,000 for an exclusive interview, but of course, no one's sure if it'll take it since the disc may not have a need for earthly money,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it'll take it. It's gonna take it.
Yeah.
It's gonna
so,
take the money.
We all know Ashton is a prolific tweeter.
Yeah.
I mean, has he mentioned the controversy to him at all?
He hasn't, no, and he's posted 5 times already this morning, but no tweet mentioning the disc.
Okay, so I noticed the disc also appears to have some runes scrawled on it. I mean, do we know what those say?
Well, TMZ warns that these words are not to be uttered aloud, but apparently all it says is Ach tu Nag
Hagul.
Okay, any idea what that means?
No, but you know these Hollywood types. Probably some sort of yoga.
Okay, Brian, what's going on?
I don't know what's going on, actually.
Okay, is there any comment yet from Demi on the disc?
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Brian? Okay, Brian. Brian? Oh, well, I guess we lost Brian.
The bigger you build the bonfire, the more darkness you will reveal.
I will now read excerpts from Admiral Richard B. Byrd's diary dated February and March of 1947. I must write this diary in secrecy and obscurity. It concerns my Arctic flight of the 19th day of February in the year of 1947. There comes a time when the rationality of men must fade into insignificance, and one must accept the inevitability of the truth. I am not at liberty to disclose the following documentation at this writing. Perhaps it shall never see the light of public scrutiny, but I must do my duty and record here for all to read one day. In a world of greed and exploitation of certain of mankind can no longer suppress that which is true.
It's time for the Longines Chronoscope, a television journal of the important issues of the hour, brought to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Good evening, this is Frank Knight. May I introduce our co-editors for this edition of the Longines Chronoscope? Larry Lesser, CBS News correspondent, and Kenneth Crawford, National Affairs Editor of Newsweek magazine. Our very distinguished guest for this evening is Admiral Richard E. Byrd.
The North Pole used to be a no-man's land, but these are the days when, by buying a ticket on a commercial airliner, you can fly across the North Pole and drink a cocktail at the same time. You know, only 70 or more years ago, about 35 years ago, our guest tonight found out whether there was any land north of the North American continent. He made that first discovery flight, and I must say that Admiral Byrd, our guest tonight, is not only our greatest living explorer, but he's been an inspiration to countless Americans. Admiral Byrd, you've been to both the North Pole and the South Pole. Is there any unexplored land left on this earth that might appeal to adventurous young Americans?
Yes, there is. And not up around the North Pole, because it's getting crowded up there now, because they find out it's really usable, not only to live in, but militarily. But strangely enough, there's left in the world today an area as big as the United States that's never been seen by a human being. And that's beyond the pole on the other side of the South Pole from Middle America. And I think it's quite astonishing that there should be an area as big as that unexplored.
That's a tremendous
challenge. So there's a lot of adventure left down at the bottom of the world.
Well, Admiral, do you hope to see that?
I do.
Well, Admiral, would you say that since you've been to both the extremities of Earth, are these expeditions to such far-off places, are they getting easier because of modern techniques, or is danger still close at hand?
Well, it's a little risky, but nothing like it used to be with the old slow planes and the small cruising radius where we had to put down bases. We replaced the dog teams, and of course that was a big improvement. But now the planes go much faster, and they are safer, and they have a much bigger cruising radius. You haven't got the danger of a terribly heavy load.
For want of a nail, the shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, the horse was lost. For want of a horse, the rider was lost. For want of a rider, the battle was lost. For want of a battle, the kingdom was lost. And all for the want of a horseshoe.
There is a hole in front of the shovel, shovel in front of the brawn. 6 billion gorillas for whom the graves yawn. Each with of his mulish days to choose his tool of trade. Dueling blades that cue the cruel charade and fuel the flames. You would clue the crew into the civil. Just get the food and land like you the man, and flew the coop over the pit bulls. Dash back, flash you the compassion and nano police. Sat beneath an avalanche, jagged an adequate season. I will stop the violence more than I was Pontius Pilate. Cops and robbers riot by the five obnoxious sirens. A is gullible, he figure all man equal, no brainer. Take it as friends and neighbors, bid and cater. Moms raised the babies through a very churchy 80s. Sunday mornings reinforce the waiting gates of Hades. And he brazen, but apparently inferno bound now. For when a man of course beside his wrongs, he wouldn't bow down. The punishment should fit the reasons you must punish him. Never puncture skin or pull the colored rugs from under them. Two opposing motherships shall not employ the gunner's deck. Brotherhoods of public good do not employ the unctuous in you. Observing how the giveth is disproportionate to the taker, the way decide to make it his day. All the stomach odium glow in a cold holster when it could have stood easily in a tub juggling toaster.
No mountain too high, no city too far, no coma tonight, no city.
yard. No treaty to sign. Skin crawling off the drawl, and I would claw the awkward tone up. I'd known it wasn't roses, but hoped it was less corrosive. Coasting to the focus of the closest diagnosis, like Holmes. The barnacles that chew upon the flesh of man, including to the suitor, is capital to a beggar's hand. And comfortably sung a stubborn legacy of gluttony, with carnivores that burrow like hunters into the blood and meat. What? The ginny gin up in the city, pick your sinning pen up, let her numb the spitting stigma. Along came a spider, sold her eggs to any buyer. And a shooter in the back of six legs wider than the driver. If you make no friends on the way to the top rung, there is no secret handshake club. I do not give a fuck, but know the cancers make the olive branches obviously standard. So when they extend from the yachts and mansions, drop your cannons. All kings hanging but a cliffside drip dry. Will he clip the zipline or slip for his final dip dive? If he live, will he survive the milligrams of middle ground? They pump into the pinstripe pentagrams over Tinseltown. Or kill a man who trickled down a city with his scissors out of sickles. Dipped in military hells, bells and whistles. Riders to the east, not a wild tribe. Thank you for the peace on earth and mercy miles high. No mountain too high, no city too far. No coma tonight, no city tomorrow. No fire too live, no city too charged. No treaty to sign, no city to guard.
And all for the want of a horseshoe leg.
Admiral, an expedition to which I believe you're the advisor is now en route. What is that expedition doing?
Well, that's the icebreaker Etka, and it's a reconnaissance expedition. It's going down to the South Pole area to make certain observations and to look for some bases. They will be back in April, and they will report back, and upon the information we get from that undertaking, we will base the bigger expedition that's to follow.
Is that very definitely planned, or is that...
That is being planned right now. So I'm willing to say to you that there will be a number of expeditions that will follow, I think, year after year, to the bottom of the world, because the government has really become interested.
Well, Admiral Byrd, I can understand, I think everybody can, the interest in the North Pole, because it's so near our greatest challenger, Soviet Russia, but why this interest in the bottom of the world? Nobody living down there, is there?
No, it's pretty cold. There's only one permanent resident, that's the Emperor Penguin. The little ones live further north. I tell you one reason they're interested. It's by far the most valuable, important place left in the world for science. That's why the scientific groups all over the nation are really interested. But more important than that, it has to do with the future of the nation, those to come after us, or even during your lifetime. Because it happens to be an untouched reservoir of natural resources. And, you know, as the world shrinks with an ever-increasing acceleration, far-flung places once useless, like we thought the North Pole was, and no man's land, become very useful. The bottom of the world will be important, not only to us, but to our allies.
Does it have military importance?
It has some, and as the world shrinks, it will continue to shrink with an ever-increasing acceleration, thus bringing these places closer, and in the future, I can see a time when it will be very, very important strategically.
Well, has the development of air power increased the strategic importance of places like the Parma Peninsula, we'll say?
Very much so. Even now, if anything happened and we lost the Panama Canal, we would have to control the islands just north of Antarctica, which are part of Antarctica, and between there and Cape Horn.
But a magpie, unseen hand dragging his graphite. Cross contour, a little bit of backlight. Black ink after a Bristol to baptize. You can imagine a rush that ensues when you get three dimensions stuffed in a two. Then it's off to a school where it's all the get to. Being trained and observed by a capable few. Back in New York by peeps and a dog in a two bedroom. Doing menial jobs. Plus rhyming and stealing and being a clod. Distractions, freedom abroad. I left some years of giving a light. I left some will the spirit away. I let my fears materialize. I let my skills deteriorate. Horned by the thought of what I should have been. Continuing a mission that was rooted in a 20-year affinity and rickety condition with an ID crisis. Snap on the front lawn, look up in the sky, it's
shapes falling out of the fringe. All heart though we would have made cowardly kings. They will chop you down just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. And now we're colors pouring out of the fringe. All heart though we would have made cowardly kings. They will chop you down just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. Just to count your rings.
Used to paint. Hard to admit that I used to paint. Natural light on a human face. Stenciled fire in his roommate's face. It was blooming addiction. A miss and a push and a pigment. Book like a tattooed pigskin look. Pinhead kids in a minute. Drank Kool-Aid from a tube of acrylic. And I grew up in a linseed oil or a linen. Joy to the poison. Voice to the resin. Capture a map of the gesture. Back up, add a little accurate fat to the figure. Redo that, move that inward. Zinc white lightning shoots from his fingers. Studios drilled with illusion and tinctures. Stay tuned for the spooky adventures. You can imagine the stars that align when a forearm starts foreshortening right. A torso hung on a warping spine in proportion. Reads is warm and alive. Routine day with a dirt cheap brush. Then a week goes by and it goes untouched. Then two, then three, then a month. And the rest of your life to beat yourself up. I left some seasons eager to fall. I left some work to bury your life. I let my means of being dissolve. I let my person curl up and die. Eating up his innards and unfeasible anxiety. Is brutally committed to relinquishing his privacy. Aligning with the trials of the anti-Midas. Snap on the back lawn, look up in the sky. It's
shapes falling out of the fringe. All heart though we would have made cowardly kings. They will chop you down just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. And now we're colors pouring out of the fringe. All heart though we would have made cowardly kings. They will chop you down just to count your rings. Just to count your rings. Just to count your rings.
I've heard it said that there are seven continents in the world, and one of them has never been seen by a woman, and that's Antarctica. Is that actually true?
Well, if the Palm Peninsula is an island, as far as I know, that's true. No woman's ever stepped foot upon the Antarctic continent, and it's the most peaceful place in the world.
Well, I'm sure that won't last very long. I understand that now that you're working with the Arnold Bread Company in charge of frozen foods now. Is there any future for frozen foods down these frozen extremities?
Well, I think the human race can be helped by that. This was thought out by Dean Arnold, who's, in my opinion, a great humanitarian. He learned that we went down there after 4 or 5 years and finished a meal that we had left there on the table when we had evacuated Little America. Everything was perfect, including the bread. So he got the idea of this frozen bread, and already he sent some to Europe, and just worked very well over there for some of the starving people. So you can store it down in the Antarctic and against the lean years, and you wouldn't have any people in the world really starving if you did that.
Yes, in the event of an atomic war.
You stay there forever.
Admiral, you speak of the resources of Antarctica. What are they? What are the natural resources there?
Well, we've found enough of coal within 180 miles of the South Pole in a great ridge of mountains that's not covered with snow, enough to supply the whole world for quite a while.
Well,
that's the coal. Now, there's evidence of many other minerals. We are pretty sure there's oil. Now, that coal shows the bottom of the world. Now, by far, the coldest spot in the world. Where that coal is gets 100 below zero in the winter.
Well,
it was once tropical. So we think there's oil there, and there's evidence, probably uranium there.
Is it any secret? Is there uranium there? That would be the only thing that would be practical to actually go after, I suppose. Everything else would be economically unfeasible, wouldn't it?
Well, as we recklessly expend our resources, the time will come when we'll have to go after that stuff down there. Well, you know, I avoided what you said about uranium. I'm not sure about that. I don't want to have the world fighting over the Antarctic.
Robert, is there a competition among other nations to try to get information about Antarctica and possibly to secure some of these resources?
Well, yes. There are now seven nations very much interested. Russia is interested tremendously. That I'm sure of. Australia has an expedition down there. The Argentine, the Chile, New Zealand, Britain, and so on. Now, you can understand those people down there being interested because they live down there, the New Zealanders, the Argentinians, the Chileans, and the Australians. And so we don't do much about claiming anything.
Admiral, you make us sound a little crowded. Are there that many expeditions now there or en route there?
Well, you know, as I said, it's the most peaceful place in the world, but I don't think it will be for long because of this intense interest on the part of other nations and this nation.
Well, Admiral Byrd, are private expeditions a thing of the past? Is expedition and exploration, making expedition and exploration now a purely a government function because of the tremendous cost and organization?
No, I don't think so. I think down south, it may be more or less a thing of the past, but not other expeditions that go over there. A lot of them go north now.
This latest expedition now on the way is a government expedition, I take it.
Yes, that's the government.
But Byrd, may I ask you, is there a great difference between the top of the world and the bottom of the world?
There is. Now, the North Pole is the center of an ocean 10,000 feet deep. The South Pole, the center of a plateau 10,000 feet high. The North Polar Sea is surrounded by continents that are slightly frozen. The Antarctic continent is surrounded by a belt of ice, frozen seas of at least 1,200 miles thick. Now, the south is a plateau. It gets, in some places, 14,000 feet up. I've been over areas about 13,000, and it's a little bit chilly up there. So there's that big difference between the top and bottom of the world. The north really isn't very cold up there on the Arctic Ocean.
Not compared to the south. Admiral Byrd, we often hear it said that our young Americans now aren't as hardy as their forefathers. Do you think that Americans do measure up to the standards, the physical standards and morale standards of the past?
I do. I don't believe that. I think they're just as hardy.
Well, what would you say was the most valuable factor on expedition? Is it morale or physical courage or is it sheer equipment?
Well, I've always thought that loyalty was by far the most important trait. The British told me that when I first went down in 28 that I couldn't possibly get through the winter night without a mutiny if I took more than 20 men. But to serve science, I had to take 42 men. Then I took 56 the next time, and so on. So, and I did find that loyalty was the most important thing during the winter night when it's very hard on your nerves. I think that's best trait.
That's a very valuable characteristic at any time. Well, thank you very much, Admiral Byrd. It's been a great pleasure to have you here tonight.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
The opinions expressed on the Longines Chronoscope were those of the speakers. The editorial board for this edition of the Longines Chronoscope was Larry Lesueur and Kenneth Crawford. Our distinguished guest was Admiral Richard E. Byrd.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
suddenly. Surrounded by the cold, cold wind, it's the only place that is as cold as me. That is as cold as me. That is as cold as me. That is as cold as me.
Now, go find the others.com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.